Listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And download every episode and more at BasicallyASportsShow.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
And you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Okay, so Brian Burke apparently is banning numbers, anything above number 35.
Why?
Because this is an exact quote. We're going back to numbers 1 through 35. If it was good enough for those great teams in the 50s, it's good enough for us.
So Brian Burke essentially would tell Wayne Gretzky, you can't wear number 99.
When Burke tried to do that with the Maple Leafs, their best player, a certain number 81, Phil Kessel.
It's like, no, I'm not changing my number.
Oh, who am I thinking of that was 93 with the Maple Leafs? Was that?
Doug Gilmore,
right. I was thinking Wendell Clark, but I knew that wasn't right. Doug Gilmore was 93. He was a pretty good player, right?
Yeah.
Burke has this idea in his head. He did it when he came to Anaheim, too. Everybody went to low numbers except for Rob Niedermeyer, who was number 44. But one thing that he's done that still sticks, rookies come in with high numbers, and if they want a low number, they have to earn it.
That's kind of the thing in baseball, too. At least it used to be. Obviously, you've all seen spring training games where number 76.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and when you make the big club, you get a lower number. But
it is weird when, like, you'll see a rookie come in with, like, a number 9.
Yeah.
It's like, who do you think you are?
I don't know. As was evidenced by my old screen name, my hockey number is 79.
Yeah.
And I'd just be like, yeah, for a goalie, yeah, it's a weird number for a goalie, but I like it.
Don't you know you're only supposed to be 1 or 30 or 35?
Well, fuck all of those people.
See, I was just going to ask you guys, okay, for a goalie, what's your favorite goalie number? Mine is probably either 30 or 35. I don't like number 1. 79 is cool.
I wore 79 as a goalie. In terms of more traditional goalie numbers, I'd probably go with 30. Like, if someone told me, like, oh, you have to be 1, 30, or 35, I'd probably go with 30.
I'd probably go 35. It seems it has good balance.
Like, yeah.
But yet, if Wayne Gretzky were active in the NHL today, Brian Burke would not let him wear 99.
Okay, Gretzky's at 99. Crosby wears 87. Mario Lemieux was 66.
All the young guys in the league now. Like the
but I don't know. Like
come in and use their birth year. That's why Crosby's 87.
Eric Lindros was 88.
Kane's 88, yeah.
Everyone born in 1999, they're not going to get
screwed. Sorry.
Well, they're going to get screwed.
Well, you know, Wayne Gretzky like redefined the NHL record book, so.
I'm glad you brought the number thing, though, because there's talk going around this week about retiring Michael Jordan's number in the NBA, which I think is nonsense.
See, I don't think it is, and I was completely okay. Well, when I was young at the time, and I thought it was cool when they retired Gretzky's number league-wide, and even thinking about it back today, I don't have a problem with it at all. Just to give people who might not follow hockey as much an idea of how dominant he was. In terms of scoring, there are three categories the NHL keeps track of. There's goals, there's assists, and then there's points, which is the combination of goals and assists. Gretzky runs away with all three of those records, but even if he never scored a goal, he'd still easily win the points record just off his assists alone.
That's why I'm okay with Gretzky's number being retired league-wide,
mm-hmm.
because he unequivocally, mm-hmm. there's every single number that you can ask for to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's unequivocally the
greatest
best hockey
player who's ever lived.
Right.
People argue for the merits of Bobby Orr because the defenseman and whatever, but
oh god, I have family members who go on about Bobby Orr, like,
and then there's the people that say that, well, Mario Lemieux was more talented if he didn't have Hodgkin's disease and break his back and whatever. But one way or the other, purely by the most quantifiable thing you can have, goals, assists, and points, he's far and away the best player in the league. Whereas you look at Michael Jordan, yeah, he has the 6 championships, and yeah, he's regarded as the best player of all time, but who has the most points in NBA history?
Kareem.
I'm sure he doesn't have the most assists.
No.
I'm sure he probably doesn't have the most wins. He doesn't have the most rings.
No, that would be Bill Russell, I believe.
The only thing Michael Jordan has the most of in NBA history is popularity.
Right.
In terms of popularity and brand recognition, yes. Michael Jordan's the most famous NBA player of all time. I don't know if he's unequivocally the best.
John Stockton actually has the all-time NBA assist record.
Right. So, I mean, do you want to retire Kareem's number league-wide?
Well, that's
the thing. Do you want to retire John Stockton's number league-wide? Bill Russell's number league-wide? There's so many more Wayne Gretzky's of basketball than there are Wayne Gretzky's of hockey.
They did a comparison, like if he was a baseball player, what his stats would be. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the comparison, but it was ridiculous. It was like he would have hit 1,200 home runs in his career or something like that. It was just, you know, batted 450 or whatever. It was just insane. Mm-hmm. Just how much better he would have been than everybody else. But I saw the guy play with the Rangers, and this was at the tail end of his career. And even at that point, he was just amazing. It was like, I can't even describe it, but it was like when he was on the ice, every time he would take a shift, it was like the Rangers had a scoring chance every single time he was out there. At least it felt that way.
He had amazing vision for the ice.
Right.
It's almost like he could see like 5-10 seconds ahead of the play.
I'm with Zach. I just don't think Jordan, I think you can make arguments that Jordan's not the greatest player ever. I think he's certainly in the top 10, but I don't think you can sit down and definitively say, like you can with Gretzky. I want to hear the person argue that Gretzky's not the greatest ever.
I'll get my dad on the show and he'll argue in favor of Bobby Orr because he was a defenseman. Okay, maybe he would be if he wasn't, but he was a defenseman, and Gretzky's the guy who has all the records. And
the other thing going for Gretzky that isn't going for Michael Jordan, nobody was as singularly dominant as Wayne Gretzky was to hockey as Michael Jordan is to basketball.
I agree, and I'm not taking anything away from Jordan. He was certainly, I said, in the top 10 all time. But as
I put him in the top five.
Yeah, but as someone who grew up and saw Kareem play and saw Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and guys like that, it's hard it's hard for me to say that Jordan is that much better than everybody else as Gretzky is in hockey. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing about Gretzky. Growing up playing hockey, you'd always, like, when kids are little, like, talking like 8 to 10 maybe, like, a lot of kids like to tuck their jerseys in like Wayne Gretzky. But then you kind of get into high school and less kids do that. And then the kid who insists on doing it, you all kind of make fun of. Because, like, who the fuck does he think he is? Wayne Gretzky. And it's like, it's 99 is like that to, like, a whole other level. Like, I never had anyone on my team who wore 99. But there were a few kids here and there on other teams who would wear 99. When some second liner on a high school team comes out wearing, like, 99, you're like, come on, guy. Like, come on. I think it's almost one of those things where if they hadn't retired it league-wide, there'd sort of be, like, this unspoken rule that you don't wear
it. Sure, absolutely.
Right, well, the example that you can use for that is Mario Lemieux.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you see 66s?
Nope.
Out on the ice?
No.
I mean, there may have been, but I can't recall any.
No. Because people know when you see the number 66 on a hockey jersey, you think Mario Lemieux.
Yeah.
So if you go out there and you're wearing 66, be like, oh, you're trying to be Lemieux.
I don't know. It's just I don't like the idea of retiring Jordan's number because, like you said, Zach, you can't definitively say he was the best ever, and it's just not even a question.
Yeah. So now, you know, really, you can't do that in almost any other sport. You have Jackie Robinson, but that's a special circumstance.
I would not protest if Hank Aaron or Babe Ruth got their numbers retired. I'm not campaigning for it, but if it happened, it wouldn't bug me.
I don't think they could do – it wouldn't have the same sort of significance, though, because Babe Ruth's numbers have been passed. Hank Aaron's numbers have been passed.
Yeah, like it or not, yeah.
Well, I'm going to debate Hank Aaron's numbers legitimately being passed.
Okay, but Hank Aaron, yeah, you can call him the home run king, but would you ever call him the best player in baseball? Yeah. Is he in the top 10 of the best players of all time?
That's a tough call.
I don't think so.
See, that's the thing. Hank Aaron was a consistent. He was never dominant. Babe Ruth dominated his era like no one ever had before. Hank Aaron didn't do that. Hank Aaron was just remarkably consistent. Now, he's the all-time home – well, not anymore, but he was the all-time home run leader, I believe.
In my mind, he still is.
Yeah, in my mind, too. I think he's the all-time RBI leader. I want to say he batted 300 for his career. So he was a very, very good player. I don't know if he's in the top 10, but he's got to be in the top 20. I would even put him – see, that's the thing. There's so many baseball players going back so far. It's so hard to compare eras and all that. I don't know.
But
he's not the best of all time. I wouldn't say that. No.
Well, there's another record that Wayne Gretzky is a part of. he is one half of the highest scoring brother combo in NHL history. Brent Gretzky having four goals in his NHL career.
Well, and believe it or not, Hank Aaron is one half of the brother combo with the most home runs in Major League history. His brother Tommy Aaron hit like 9, I think, or 20, or something like that.
This is a picture of Brent Gretzky, and I think that look on his face just sort of says it all.
Let's see. Was he the one they referred to as the good one?
No.
I thought Gretzky had a younger brother that, like, you know, Gretzky was the great one and his younger brother was the good one.
Using good to describe Brent Gretzky would be stretching the term good.
Brent Gretzky, if there's anyone that should have worn 66, it should have been Brent Gretzky.
I like how he wore 49. I like how he wore 49, though. It's like, yeah, you know, it's not 99, but it kind of, if you squint, looks like 99.
I'm a little more than half as good as my brother. Kind of.
But no, that he played for the Lightning during that period where the Lightning were doing anything to just get publicity, like when they had that female goaltender play like a period.
She never played in an actual game, right?
It was an exhibition.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know how we got off on the number track, but I say no to Jordan retiring his number.
Nah.
I'm against it.
Well, I guess on that note, we can talk about that about how LeBron has decided
to go
on a number. It was between 6 and 23.
The biggest news of the week, by far and away, LeBron picks his number.
What happened to 32?
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping he would go with 32. I thought that would have been kind of cool.
Well, with LeBron picking his number, that allows Nike to now produce merchandise. And, you know, you've seen the trend of where people will take numbers and put them in for letters, especially concerning sports figures.
Yeah like Forsicken or Forsikven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is what Nike's trotting out for LeBron.
Oh, boy.
Using the number 23. It's supposed to be Strive for Greatness.
Oh, God.
The number 2 is used as an E, and the number 3 is also used for an E.
That's just dumb.
The 3 I can...
The 3 works.
The 3 I could go with.
Right.
But 2... Why not use the 2 for the S?
Would you guys wear shirts like that? Like,
no.
I won't.
No.
I want nothing to do with that.
No.
Okay.
No.
I was just curious.
What was that one shirt that they had? It was that style they used across college football and even made it to the NFL, where it was like team name nose.
It was a playoff of the old Bo Nose.
Bo Nose, yeah.
Yeah, but it was still stupid. Still stupid.
They sell them in the Angels stadium. They have Albert Nose, Trout Nose.
Right. I would never be caught dead in one of those things.
No.
The only one I was ever even mildly tempted to buy was the one that said "Chicks dig the long ball."
Well, yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah,
but it was
funny. But like, I don't know. When I'm buying team apparel, I usually kind of stick to just logos.
Exactly. Same
I don't
here.
Buy like. Usually, I don't buy things that have sayings on them.
Nope.
Like. When the Ducks played the Kings in the playoffs, I did buy a shirt that says "Beat LA" on it. Didn't work out for me, but I own it.
You can use it again next year.
Now, I hate to interrupt, but we do have a Rob Ford update. Rob Ford returned from rehab, has resumed his campaign to try to win re-election for the mayor of Toronto. The Toronto Star has decided to try to reach out to members of Rob Ford's family to perhaps get an inside scoop here or there. His mother, Kathy Ford, is currently being charged with stealing toothbrushes from a Zeller's big box store.
Is it awful of me to say that I'm disappointed he went to rehab? I told you guys before.
Stealing toothbrushes.
I mean, once you smoke crack, is there anything
really
you won't do at this point? Like, you know, it runs in the family.
Yeah, yes. Once you've hit the crack pipe, there's really not a whole lot lower you can go, really.
No, not really. Did you do that to me?
Yes, sir. This Sunday, the very first preseason game, the Buffalo Bills against the New York Football Giants.
Oh, and by the way,
right here in my neck of the woods in Canton, Ohio. What the hell do they call that stadium?
Hall of Fame Field?
No, it's Paul Brown Stadium.
Stadium?
Yeah. I actually used to have Hall of Fame game tickets.
Yeah!
but I got rid of him because there's just really no point in going down and watching the first preseason game of the year. But I went. I was there for the very first game of the brand new Cleveland Browns. But anyway, so we want to talk some football, right?
I want to talk some football relocation rumors, actually. We've got two on the block.
Okay.
The Bills are, of course, for sale because, what's his name? Something Wilson.
Ralph Wilson.
Ralph Wilson. Shockingly passed away at the age of 94. And, of course, the Bills are kind of in ownership limbo. The top bid was Bon Jovi and his group of Toronto investors. Yes! I live 45 minutes away from Toronto. I'm a fan of Toronto sports teams. I don't want to see the NFL in Toronto. I don't want to see the NFL in Canada. I quite like the CFL. Thank you very much. And I like the NFL too, but I appreciate it for what it is, and I appreciate the CFL for what it is. I just would rather they not start crossing into each other.
Well, Mike, before you go on, I have a serious question for you. Do you have one of the Keep John Bon Jovi Out of Here posters or whatever those things are that are going
on? No, I do. No, I don't. I should drive to Buffalo just to get one. But
didn't it come out today, like the two groups that are the leaders or most likely to get the Bills are probably going to keep them in Toronto anyway?
Or in
Buffalo, yeah.
Well, the Bon Jovi group was recently outbid by the owner of the Buffalo Sabres.
Yep, Terry Pegula.
Something like $1.2 billion, I think, was what he offered.
He has a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's still cheaper than the Clippers, guys.
It's
an NFL franchise.
The Clippers are worth more than the Buffalo Bills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? All Buffalo Bills jokes aside, I don't understand how that's possible.
It's not.
Because the Bills have...
The Buffalo Braves are worth more than the Buffalo Bills.
That was good, Zach.
That's a sports history joke.
I know, I got it. I caught it.
I say move the Clippers back.
I tell you what, speaking of the Buffalo Braves, they had some
badass. They had some nice uniforms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they had a couple good players, Randy Smith and Bob McAdoo. I loved that team when I was about 10, I think.
And then they became the Clippers.
Yeah, and that was that.
But, of course, owner of the Sabres, he wants to keep them in Buffalo. Another bidder has entered the fray as well, though. Donald Trump.
I thought I got an update on my phone that said he was very, very, very not going to buy the Bills.
Would he move them to New Jersey if he got them? Because that's what I think he would do.
Just move them to Atlantic City?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't picture Donald Trump owning a team in Buffalo.
They build a new stadium in Atlantic City, like the Trump Dome.
Welcome to Trump Dome.
Home of Atlantic City Trumps.
Big tacky-ass golden, I don't know, Buffalo, I guess, all over the place. Oh.
It would be like the Atlantic City Trump Buffaloes.
Oh, my.
Here we go. AC Buffalo. Yeah, that would be it, right?
Oh, yeah.
There AC, you go. Get a little, little MLS
or the Atlantic
action.
Or the Atlantic City Bills of Buffalo.
There you go. Okay, so Donald Trump.
But I just wanted to ask you guys, I kind of gave my opinion on it, but what do you guys think about the possibility of an NFL team being based in Canada in Toronto full time?
Meh.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect me. Yeah, it's there, cool. I just don't want, they're the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
You know?
If you want to put an expansion team in Toronto, I'm fine with that. If you want to move a team that has no following, like, say, the Jacksonville Jaguars, to Buffalo,
I'd hold your tongue, lest the four Jacksonville Jaguars fans that are on those boards start hounding us because they are
I'll take my chances.
They are a vicious bunch.
But I don't want to see the Bills leave Buffalo. I honestly think that they are very much like the original Browns. They're just... just such a part of that city that I would just hate to see it happen. I mean, and granted, they'd only be 45 minutes or so up the road, but it's just not the same.
And I don't know. It's the Bills. When the Bills would play in Toronto, yeah, there is a minority of diehard NFL fans in Toronto who want the NFL in Toronto and they want it to be the Bills, and they're really vocal about it. But outside of them, nobody gave a shit.
Well, here's the thing.
No, but
yeah, like when they played those games in Toronto, didn't they like not sell them out?
No,
they failed to sell out the Sky Dome, which is small by NFL standards.
Yeah,
and I keep saying this because I just find it hilarious. It's one of those two cultures sort of meeting things where when they would have the games in Toronto, some Buffalo fans would come up and they'd start tailgating, And then the Canadian fans who went to the game, like, didn't know what to make of American tailgating. Like,
why are all these people standing outside of their cars eating food and having grills and stuff?
You know there's food inside, right?
The NFL thinks they can just drop a team anywhere and people will show up. But Jacksonville is proof positive that that simply isn't the case. There are more than enough people in the Jacksonville area to support an NFL team, but they don't.
Mm-hmm. Toronto's been given all these exhibition games. They were more to kind of test the market, really.
Yeah.
To see if Toronto was going to work.
At the height of it, I think they were doing two games a year in Toronto. Now they're down to one. And the last I heard about it was that they were contemplating, like, just, like, quote unquote, taking a break. And just not doing it for a few years, so...
Like, they were used as tests, and they didn't work.
Yeah.
It's like when the NHL put those exhibition games in Kansas City...
And no one cared.
...years ago, and nobody showed up. So they said, okay, well, there's a nice arena there. It's suitable for NHL hockey, but nobody's going to show up, so why bother?
Yeah!
You couldn't put an expansion team in Buffalo, like, now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. If the Buffalo Bills didn't exist, you wouldn't be putting a team in Buffalo.
No. Same like Green Bay. I mean, Green Bay, that would never happen.
But the fact that the Buffalo Bills are still there.
That's what I was going to say.
It's cool.
It makes sense. Yeah, I like the Bills. I like their thing. They've got a good team going. They're kind of rebuilding. I like the direction they're going.
Got great
uniforms. They always manage to beat the Patriots somehow every year.
And don't the fans pretty much show up win or lose? I mean, they get great support. Yeah, so why would you want to put them somewhere where you're not guaranteed that?
I am amazed, and I have a deep respect for Buffalo Bills fans because Maple Leafs fans show up even though the team sucks. But Maple Leafs fans don't have to sit outside in like the middle of February as a blizzard's coming down on them to watch the Maple Leafs suck.
Well, and in Buffalo, that blizzard can happen in the middle of October.
Exactly. So, you know, it's just really... nice to see these fans in Buffalo come out, support their team through thick and thin. They even supported them when the team looked like crap with those god-awful
uniforms. Oh, my God. Worst uniforms ever. Well, and used to be the worst uniforms ever. Not anymore.
No. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they saw that challenge.
I want to derail us one more time here. Did you ever think you would live in a world where those Bills uniforms weren't the worst uniforms in NFL history?
If you had told me that 5 years ago, I would have said no.
Yeah.
No.
I will say this, though. They didn't look bad with the dark jerseys and the white pants. They were decent.
But they never did that.
They never did that.
They kept wearing monochrome. But I like teams like the Packers. I like teams like the Bills because they're kind of throwbacks to the days when professional football was confined to like small, like Rust Belt or like small Rust Belt.
Bring back the Providence Steamroller.
Bring back the Canton Bulldogs.
Exactly, and like a lot, and all those teams either moved to like the huge cities or just folded. But the Bills and the Packers are like two of those teams that just stuck around and they survived. And I think that it's really cool that those teams are still active. And you know, my reasons for wanting the CFL to succeed and thrive, you know, that's a big factor in it. But I also don't want to see Buffalo lose their team.
No,
so.
I think that would be awful. That's what they have there. They've got the Bills and the Sabres, and that's about it. You ever been to Buffalo? Not a whole lot going on there.
I was there for a Leafs game once.
It's not exactly Riviera on Lake Ontario or anything like that.
No, it's not. No. But, you know, it's not bad. Like, it's not Detroit.
If you can get to Buffalo the
most places aren't Detroit, and be thankful for that.
If you can get to Buffalo in the 3 weeks when there's not 3 feet of snow on the ground, it's not bad. But other than that, what's the other relocation thing? Are we talking about the Oakland Raiders?
Oakland? You mean the San Antonio Raiders?
Yeah.
Mark Davis.
He doesn't even have a controlling stake in the franchise.
I think technically he does because he's
the largest single shareholder, but he doesn't have the majority, no.
Yeah. But
he has 47%.
And before we kind of get into this, I just wanted to reiterate that I keep forgetting this member's name, and I really feel sorry about it, but on the sportslogos.net forums, we have a member from the Oakland area, and this member has said that they've seen Mark Davis regularly purchasing cough syrup.
Nice.
So apparently Mark Davis making decisions for the Raiders while high on cough syrup.
Is he doing a little bit of...
It wouldn't be any different than what Al was doing.
But everyone kind of pegged the Raiders because there's no money for Oakland to build them a new stadium.
No.
So people had pegged them to probably go to L.A. or just share the 49ers' new stadium in Santa Clara. But a new challenger entered the fray, as Mark Davis is apparently meeting with San Antonio city officials.
It'd be such a Raiders thing to do.
You know what, though? I got to be honest. I like that idea. If they can't stay in Oakland, I think San Antonio would be a cool place for them.
You know why I like San Antonio? Because I like when cities have the same colors.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't have to change.
No, yep. Spurs. If you're a Spurs fan, congratulations. You have your new Raiders t-shirt.
A lot of people have said that it's a transparent bluff because the Alamo Dome isn't exactly up to snuff.
But right, they still have to build a stadium there.
They still have to build a stadium. But here's the thing.
It's cheaper to do it in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That this is why I think San Antonio has traction. One, the Alamo Dome would only be temporary. Insofar as that is concerned, while the Alamo Dome might be outdated, it is still better than the Oakland Coliseum.
Yes.
Which, last I checked, still has that raw sewage problem.
Playing a game on the streets of Detroit would be better than playing a game in the Oakland Coliseum.
The Oakland Coliseum has been terrible since I was a kid. That's how long they've had problems with that stadium.
I remember there was a shot of the Oakland Coliseum, like, from the parking lot. And there are caged-off walkways to get from the parking lot to the Coliseum so you're not mugged or killed on your way in. So, in that regard, San Antonio works. And two, your choices, let's assume for whatever reason, LA simply isn't going to work. I've heard rumors that apparently the Los Angeles city government is not keen on the Raiders being the team that comes back.
No. trust me, that's true.
Because of the element that they bring with them.
Yeah, that's the PC way of saying yes.
Fans are jackasses.
Yeah.
So if we assume that LA's out, okay, so they're looking at San Antonio as an alternative to Oakland. Oakland doesn't have the money to build them a stadium. San Antonio does, one, because San Antonio is not broke, and two, as Zach said, it's cheaper to build in Texas.
Sure.
So
here's the only question I would have, okay, do Jerry Jones and Bob McNair let this happen?
Well, the thing is, they don't
have a say.
I don't know. I mean, because
they don't need a unanimous league decision. They just need a majority. So,
well, yeah, because
they need a majority. But I don't think it cuts. I think what you're trying to ask, it doesn't cut into their market. San Antonio is its own thing.
Yeah, I've always kind of associated it. I've always kind of associated the three centers of Texas sports as being Dallas, San Antonio, and Houston. And they're really.
And like, I know the Cowboys play some preseason, like a preseason game in San Antonio.
And I'm sure that there are Texans and Cowboys fans in San Antonio because they don't have a local option. But I'd have to assume that that local option wouldn't have a – if that local option were to arrive, it wouldn't have too much of a trouble getting – you know, converting those fans, especially when you can look at the state of the franchises involved. Houston just – I mean, that train was steadily progressing along, and then it just flew off the rails last season.
Football isn't a hard sell in Texas.
No, not at all.
And
you know,
it's kind of like putting
putting
a hockey team in Hamilton. People say, "Oh, everyone will still be Leafs fans." Well, that might be true, but they still sell out. So
you still have hockey fans.
Like you guys, I like it. I think San Antonio Raiders, just as an aesthetic phrase,
sounds
good.
Fine.
And as Zach said, it's such a Raiders thing to do.
It really would be.
It's such a Raiders thing to do. Really
I like it. I don't know that if Dave was just using it, like you said, Mike, is just a transparent ploy to try to force Oakland's hand or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that they're just not going to build them a stadium.
No, exactly. And that's why I think even if it is a ploy, it's still in play because it might be a ploy. But if it comes down to it and Oakland says, we just can't build you a stadium, he's going to go there.
Have to have a stadium to play in.
Exactly. People assume when it comes to franchise relocation talk that if a city is being used as a ploy, that it doesn't have a real chance. But just by virtue of the fact that conversations are happening, there is a chance if things don't work out in the original location.
In terms of like the location or the relocation, if you get to a point where Oakland doesn't renew the lease with the Raiders don't have a place to play, and San Antonio says, hey, you can come play in the Alamo Dome, they would have to take it, right? The NFL wouldn't just let the Raiders not play for a season.
No.
Right?
And think about this. that, like, the Raiders logo gives no indication for the city. Literally nothing would have to change about their uniforms.
No.
And you want to know what else would be incredibly Raiders thing to do? If the city of Oakland try to do that thing where, well, we want the name and history of the Raiders to stay here, and the Davis family just goes, no.
I
got to bet that Al Davis, as nutty as he was and as out of it as he was, when he saw what happened with the Browns, I bet you anything that he put something into their deal where that can't happen to them.
Yeah. No, Al Davis kind of became a caricature later in life, but what a lot of people forget was that back before he went senile, he had a very sharp mind for business.
Oh, he was a very shrewd businessman, yeah, definitely.
I mean, as commissioner of the AFL, he basically forced the NFL into a merger.
I like this. I think it would be, like Zach said, it's just such a Raider thing to do. It would be cool.
It would be a Raiders thing to do. It would be cool. And, again, kind of using that whole Texas and football, hockey in Canada analogy, football is huge in Texas, and it would probably be a good move from a league standpoint, to have as many Texas-based franchises as possible.
Well, think about this.
Move the Jaguars to El Paso.
There you go. Let's put four NFL teams in Texas.
Move the Bills to Lubbock.
Yeah, think about it too, though.
El Paso Chargers.
Yeah, obviously, Texas is Cowboys country. I mean, Houston, I suppose, has a little pocket there of Texans fans. But you're at a point in the Dallas Cowboys history where I don't think it would be that difficult to get people in San Antonio to switch allegiances. It's not like the Cowboys are wheeling out Super Bowl after Super Bowl every year.
I think the difference is that the Raiders are a crappily run organization.
Yeah.
Like, if they continue, well, so are the Cowboys. The Cowboys at least make headlines. Like, they try to do stuff. The Raiders,
Mark Davis making team decisions high on cough syrup.
Yeah, Mark Davis is worse than his father was at organizing a football team.
At least Al Davis, before he went senile, knew how to run a football team. It just seems as if Mark Davis skipped that whole competency period and just skipped straight to the senility.
Like I've told you guys before, it's just weird to me to see the Raiders be this awful, because growing up, they were always good. Always. Maybe not a Super Bowl contender every year, but they were always good. And now they're a laughing stock. It's a shame. Unless they change ownership, they could move them to the moon, and it's not going to help.
In terms of NFL alignment, like NFL relocations coming up, here's what I want to see. I want to see the Raiders in San Antonio for the reasons that we've gone over. I'm not going to lie. It being a Raiders thing to do is part of that.
Sure.
But, you know, it fits in with the team, and there are legitimate reasons why I think it's a viable market. And I want to see the Chargers, and I want to see the Rams both in L.A.
At least the Rams, if not both.
Yeah, I'll take the Rams.
And put them back in the blue and white uniforms, we got a deal.
Blue and gold.
White, blue,
well,
white.
See, if it's blue and gold, though, and the Chargers go too, then, like, you don't have to change the signage. It's, like, all perfect.
Yeah,
just make Los Angeles.
Just put Los Angeles football or something like that.
Put Los Angeles in block letters in each end zone and be done with it.
Yeah, like gold Los Angeles on a blue background in each, and you're done.
Well, but you see, now, to defend my beloved blue and whites, there is white in the Chargers color scheme, so blue and white would work, too. Same deal. Los Angeles and white in both ends.
Yeah, except the blue and gold uniforms are superior.
Well, to some people. The people with less taste than others, yeah.
Okay. I will say that I tend to favor the blue and white scheme over blue and gold, but I got to say, the blue and gold, those shoulder horns, sleeve horns, those are cool.
Yeah, they are. I'll agree with that.
People like to say, oh, they don't make sense because you already have the horns on the helmets. Why do you need it? Like, no, you don't understand. It of course, it's nonsensical, but it's like a horn stripe. But it's on the sleeve. It's cool.
Exactly.
I remember when they first came out with those uniforms and the announcers actually talked about it during the game. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world because they were talking about uniforms. I was probably 10 or something. I don't remember.
Apparently, they did the same thing when the Bengals switched to their superior uniforms.
Yeah, well, the helmet, yes. The rest of it. Well, the early versions of that uniform were great. But now,
yeah, no, the current version of it is just...
Are you going to watch the Hall of Fame game Sunday?
I will. I'll tune in for a bit, and then I'll see if it manages to keep me around. But I will tune in for the start of it. You know what I'm going to watch? I'm looking forward to that Buccaneers-Jaguars preseason game. and have you noticed the... it's kind of come to light the more we see of this new Bucks uniform, the random black spray painted stripes.
No.
So if you look
I
at
try not to look at that thing.
If you look at the Buccaneers helmets, right? Along the top part of the helmet, there is black spray paint. Two spray painted black lines along the top of each Buccaneers helmet.
Why?
I will. They say it's to mimic the look of a cannonball.
Huh?
Jesus. And the team defended it by saying
Nike.
It is a unique design element.
Oh, Nike, just shut up.
God, you don't. Just because you're called the Buccaneers doesn't mean you have to go out with a sword and
And, well, you know, the pewter helmet? Do you know why it was a pewter helmet in the first freaking place? Because it looked like a cannonball!
Okay,
there's
I'm
no
trying
need to paint black stripes on it.
I'm trying to find an image. Like, it flew under a lot of people's radar because people just assumed it was shadow. It was like shadow or trick of the light. But it turns out no, these are actual.
You've got to be kidding!
Here you go. Take a look and soak it in.
Oh my god!
Oh,
how does that look any more like a cannonball?
It looks like a mistake.
Bring Back the Vet actually had a great idea of how these happened 2 minutes before like the
I'm
unveiling.
Reading it.
A vandal broke in and they caught him. But
basically, right before the unveiling, someone goofed and spray painted streaks on the helmet or spilled paint or something. Since they couldn't postpone the release, they just made up some bullshit reason to explain it. That's why it's hand painted, and now here we are. Pretty much. Wow.
Yeah.
That is so dumb.
Imagine the helmet graphic when that helmet goes against the Jaguars helmet in
the
preseason game.
Oh, my God.
Those damn numbers. Screw you, Buccaneers.
Hey. But you know what? All this makes sense when you realize that Malcolm Glazier was at death's door when these things were approved. So he's like, I don't care.
He was probably hallucinating on pain meds or something.
He probably didn't even know what he was signing off on. They're just like, hey, Malcolm, we need your signature to make this official. Okay.
Wow. Those are so bad.
And it's even worse when you consider, like, at least the Jaguars, the uniforms previous to this weren't that great either, so it was just kind of going from crap to crap. But when you consider how good the Bucs looked before this.
I've said it. Every combo they had, well, it may not have been the greatest uniform in the NFL, every single combo they had prior to this looked good. All right.
Oh, my God.
And again, to echo another poster's thoughts, old school Vikings, he said, it's as if at a board meeting, Nike decided that the worst reaction was, I thought these were ugly, but it's growing on me. No, these don't grow on you, because every time you notice something else, it gets worse. It's like little hidden time bombs of bad design that you notice.
I can understand some of the things they did, but the black spray paint stripes, I just don't.
I don't understand a lot of
it. How does that look like a cannonball?
Here's the thing. This is what I've been saying.
How does that make any sense to you?
Nike is behind the greatest practical joke of all time. They're just going, let's put these stupid spray paint stripes on this helmet and see if we can get people to buy it. They're just doing this bullshit just to see how far they can go.
Those numbers infuriate me because
traditional Buccaneer sword carvings. Fuck you.
There are no traditional Buccaneer sword carvings. Like if you
those
type
don't exist.
That, they don't exist. And two, your big thing that we want to make everything look piratey, so we're going to give them digital alarm clocks.
I was just going to say, so you go with a digital alarm clock? Well, you know what? When it's Nike, that makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Just cacophony of suck.
Now, see, again, if we had titles for episodes, that would be it.
Cacophony of suck.
Cacophony of suck. Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I'm going to start titling the episodes, and that's what this one's going to be.
It's great. I come up with creative titles for basically a geek show when I post them on other sites other than the Kramer boards. It's great fun.
Well, you should start doing that with the boards, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do that. Cacophony of Suck is the name of this episode.
But imagine that Buccaneers uniform, those Jags uniforms, same field. And then you factor in that after the first two series, both teams are going to go with their D stringers. It would literally be the ugliest football game in every respect that ever happened.
I really think that this game is toying with the fabric of the universe. Something bad. It could create a paradox. It could create something.
Time's going to rip it open on the field.
Something bad is going to happen with that game because
Ed Cthulhu, the outer god, is going to have to try it. But you want to know what outs I'm looking forward to? More so than the terrible looking game. It's when the pictures of the game inevitably make their way to the boards and certain people will say, I don't know, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
And it will happen.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Zach's Tabs.
Zach's Tabs!
Another good one, Mike. Way to go.
Woo.
So, the University of Oregon, you know, their football team is known for progressive uniform stuff.
Yeah, if that's what you want to call
it. Let's say that.
Well, they're the ones who started this whole crap show that eventually led to the Buccaneers travesties.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, they do some. I guess they do some stuff with their season tickets for their football games. So the University of Oregon, Oregon Ducks tickets, they put out a little graphic showing that they use foil. They've used like a texture, like a football texture. 2012, they used a hologram. Well, coming to this season's Oregon tickets. Scratch and sniff.
I've got to hear.
And it's not going to be like the grass of the stadium or.
Isn't that a Carl's Jr. burger?
It's a Carl's Jr. hamburger.
Because that's a scent that I want to actively seek out.
Especially an artificial version of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's
now,
the
now,
reason?
Greg,
yes.
Now, Greg, I know that you are something of a ticket collector.
Yeah.
Do you need one of these?
I've got to have one of these. just for the sheer absurdity of it, I've got to have one of these.
Well, and Stanford, with a good blow to Oregon's confidence, it says the Stanford Athletics Twitter feed, they retweeted the thing where it says Oregon issues football tickets that smells like Carl's Jr. Let jokes begin about cents for other Pac-12 schools tickets. And Stanford responded with roses.
Oh.
Nice. Nice.
Nice.
Rose Bowl.
Stanford taking the high road and still.
That's the smart kids.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the reasoning behind this? There has to be some
marketing.
Sort of.
Marketing being.
Yeah, Carl's Jr. said, hey, you know, it'd be really cool if you could smell cheeseburgers.
If you could smell our greasy, disgusting cheeseburgers on your tickets.
Okay. But yes, I would love to have one of these. They will just, this isn't a Nike thing, but they're the reason for this kind of stuff.
No, they are.
Blaming scratch and sniff on Nike?
I'm blaming the idea of doing a scratch and sniff ticket on Nike.
I am. I will go down that road because Nike's the one who kicked off this whole stupid uniform trend with Oregon.
What if,
and even though
did
this
Nike
isn't
release a scratch and sniff uniform?
I wouldn't put it past them.
God, I hope they're not listening because they'll do it.
Guys, that's the best idea.
They're responsible for all the
Ravens uniforms. Will smell like crab cakes.
But
Cleveland Browns uniforms will smell like the Cuyahoga River. Ooh.
Will the Browns uniforms just set on fire? Johnny Manziel's just on the sidelines and suddenly.
Just spontaneously combust? God, that'd be great.
This current uniform trend that Nike started, it's part of a mentality that Oregon themselves have adopted, and now we've gotten to the point where everything about Oregon has to be a gimmick. The tickets have to be a gimmick. And now it's a very stupid gimmick.
Exactly.
God, damn it.
Well,
can't you just be a football team for a university?
No. I will say, though, the year before, I really liked their uniforms that year. I think it was 2012, maybe.
The 2012 set was nice so long as they wore the versions that actually used school colors.
Yeah, well.
You know, instead they rolled out, like, these are our Dark Knight versions with, like, black and 10 shades of gray.
Those school colors are so 2010, Mike. Come on. I mean, really. No one does that anymore.
Nobody wears their team colors.
You know, I've brought this up before, though. Don't you think that you reach a point with all these crazy uniforms and stuff that. Because your uniform is supposed to be part of your brand. Mm-hmm. When you're wearing so many uniforms that you don't even know who you're watching half the time, I think it's kind of defeating the purpose.
It defeats the purpose, and everyone gets so caught up with trying to be next that everyone start – oh, we've seen it with other universities. They start with these uniform – these style of Oregon uniforms, and then I maintain that the next team to come out, and they just come out with a simple classic redesign, they're going to be the team that stands out.
I hope.
The Rockies. They had a T-shirt giveaway last week.
Yes.
For the best player on the Colorado Rockies, Troy Tulowitzki.
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 Yes,
the team for their T-shirt giveaway night misspelled Tulowitzki.
How does this happen?
And it wasn't just on a few of them.
It was on
it
all
was
of them,
on
right?
The entire batch.
How does this happen? How does this happen?
How do you misspell the name of your best player?
Your most popular player, your best player. Basically, I would even go as far as to say probably the all-time face of that franchise, or maybe Todd Helton, but I'm going to go with Tulowitzki. But then again, that Tulowitzki is pretty good too.
When these things arrive at Coors Field, like in the big boxes, I'm sure they had them weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and they open them up, and they see that it says Tulowitzki. Do they not say anything? Do they not complain?
Well, how many did they give away?
All of them.
10,000.
Okay, so that's about $4
Let's
a
see.
Shirt.
Hold on. Let me see.
Like $40,000. They can afford to get that fixed. I know somebody that's in the screen printing business, so I know how much these things actually cost to produce. And it's not that, especially when you're buying 10,000, it ain't that much a shirt. A couple, $3 maybe. But you know what? While we're talking about baseball really quick, I am going to admit defeat. Baseball is not what it used to be.
Oh, no.
I'm relegating it. I'm taking it a step down. It's not, how would I even describe it? It's a bigger version of the NHL is what I'm trying to say. It's a niche sport now. I hate to say it, but it's true. It really is.
Maybe. It's a lot bigger niche than the NHL has.
Yeah, I know, but
But did you see what the – oh, I thought I had that. But the Atlantic League, some of the things they were going to try to do to speed up the game.
No.
They were going to limit mound visits.
Good.
It's only like 3 a game.
Good.
Like, and they'd be used as essentially timeouts. A batter couldn't, like, step out of the box.
Good.
At all during his at-bat. Unless he got, you know, brushed back. But he couldn't, like, step out, do his gloves,
right.
Adjust his shirt. They would have, like, a 12-second pitch clock.
You know, I think if you keep the batter in the box, you probably don't need the clock. I really think that. I think
yeah.
you can get by without putting the clock in. But that's got to be done.
You would have to make the pitcher not, like, keep checking guys and holding onto the ball and stuff like that.
Umpires can handle that without a clock. I don't like the idea of putting a clock in baseball. I mean, if it has to be done, it has to be done.
Well, it wouldn't be like an actual clock, but it'd be enforced by the umpire.
Okay, I'm okay with that. That's fine.
Like,
because
it wouldn't be like a shot clock.
Because you've got a sport that it's heading, and I don't mean this is a knock on the NHL, but it's headed in that direction where it's just going to be the hardcore fans and that's it. It doesn't have across the board appeal anymore. It's mm-hmm. reached that level, and one of the biggest reasons is that the games are just, I mean, hell, I can't even watch anymore because it's just like, oh my God, this is taking forever. They've got to speed up the game. I think it was on the boards I pointed this out that I went back and watched a video from like 1981 on YouTube. It was a 9-8 game. It took 2 hours and 10 minutes to play. And then I showed a video clip of a game that was from last year that was a 3-2 game. It took 3 hours and 40 minutes. That's the problem right there.
Here's what it's listed as. The defensive team will be limited to 3 quote-unquote timeouts per game in which mound visits or on-field conferences will take place with the current pitcher. Pitching changes don't count.
Okay.
Umpires will enforce a strict 45-second time limit on timeouts.
Good.
The umpire's warning is disregarded by the defensive team and play continues to be delayed. Umpires shall declare a ball for the batter at the plate.
Good.
This one's weird. Pinch runners will be used for catchers as soon as the catchers reach base. That ensures the catchers are suited up quickly for the start of the next inning.
That's not
that big of a problem.
That's not a problem, though.
Yeah.
That's not a
problem.
And
again, this is for the Atlantic League. It's an 8-team professional independent league. The number of warm-up pitchers for each pitcher will be reduced from 8 to 6.
The biggest problem that needs to be addressed is all the screwing around that goes on the mound and in the batter's box. You take care of that, everything else follows right along.
when a manager or catcher on the defensive team indicates to home plate that they wish to issue an intentional walk, the batter is going to be automatically awarded first base without actually throwing the pitches.
Yeah, because that's kind of like the extra point. Every once in a gazillion tries, something weird will happen on an intentional walk.
And even then, it's like even less than an extra point.
Right.
I remember once where somebody didn't throw it far enough outside and Vlad Guerrero got a base hit.
And you, every once in a great while, someone will throw one too high or too wide and it gets away from the catcher. But honestly, if it'll speed up the game, I'm all for anything that will make the game faster. Anything.
That's not necessary. Umpires will be directed to enforce Rule 602 or 804 related to hitters stepping out of the box and pitchers delivering the ball within 12 seconds when the bases are unoccupied. And umpires will be directed to control the pace of play. Umpires shall adhere to the strike zone as defined in Rule 2. And observe that definition when calling balls and strikes.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, sure.
Again, the simple solution, because if they don't speed up the game, I mean, my God, when you've got hardcore fans like me that go, I just can't sit through all of this, that's a problem. It's easier for me just to go on and watch the highlights on MLB.com.
They do this great thing on Rogers Sportsnet 360 called Blue Jays in 30.
Yeah.
They basically condense an entire game down to 30 minutes.
Well, because like this Angels-Orioles game, it was a 0-0 game until now we're in the 13th. Like, it's kind of...
Christ.
Like, what? That sucks.
Yeah.
It's not even a pitcher's duel. It's not like you have dueling no-hitters. It's just like...
It's just a long game. Well, that's another thing, too. I was reading an article that batters striking out, it's up to like 21% of all at-bats now end in a strikeout. 21%. Right. That you can't fix.
Which I think is like the highest rate in baseball history.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it was like 7 or 6% or something like that. But I think it was Keith Olbermann I saw this on. But they've got to speed it up. It's as simple as that. And I'm all for anything that will keep the batters in the box, keep the pitchers moving, and get some momentum going.
Josh Hamilton, I hate you.
What did he do?
He's like 0-for-6, and he struck out on 3 pitches.
Oh, of course.
Swung at all 3 of them.
Breaking balls away, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can sit here and figure out how to get Josh Hamilton out, we've got problems, folks.
You don't even have to throw a ball in the strike zone.
Do you see what Tampa did when David Price got traded to Detroit?
Yes. No.
They put
Twitter.
They put something on Twitter of like this picture, and
it's like a picture of a beach in Tampa, then a picture of like some.
Yeah, that was like a local news thing. Yeah.
And then so Detroit came back with a picture of their stadium next to the Costco there in Tampa. And
yeah, well,
pretty much ended that debate.
Yes, but to be fair, I wouldn't fear for my life standing outside of Tropicana Field. It might be a dump, but I wouldn't feel as if my life was in imminent danger.
Not unless you were going to get hit by a meteor or something, because there's certainly no people around to do anything to you. Maybe get struck by lightning. I don't know.
Somebody died from a lightning strike here, like, last week up in Venice.
Yeah?
Kind of weird. Are lightning strike going to change their name now? I'm just saying, you know, the Washington Bullets changed their name.
Yeah. Well, we'll go from Greg's home to Mike's home.
Woo!
Mike, you're Kitchener Rangers.
All right. Rangers.
Well, you know, the Rangers are a not-for-profit organization.
Owned by the community.
Ah, right. Like the Packers.
And yes. So every year, since they're not-for-profit, they have to actually release their financial books, like they're required. Unlike other sports teams, which are private entities, they have to release.
Which is how the Chicago Blackhawks lose money, quote unquote. Right.
So the Kitchener Rangers made $6.2 million in revenue.
Wow.
For the 2012-13 season.
Not bad for junior hockey, guys.
Not bad at all.
But it also turns out that the Rangers spent $6.1
million. $0.1 million in the bank. Woo.
Biggest revenue generator was ticket sales at $3.6 million. Mm-hmm. Expenses included facility rental, team travel, advertising, and of course, money for the players' education.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah. I'd be willing to bet that of all the sports podcasts and sports talk shows in America, this is probably the only one that talks about the Kitchener Rangers on a regular basis.
On anything approaching a regular basis.
Although
if you want, I can come in and have, we could have like Kitchener Rangers lowdown each episode.
That'd be awesome.
We need to get our investigative team on this, guys.
Ah.
You know, we're brilliant scientific minds. And
we are?
Some of the world's greatest scientists have been unable to describe what is happening in Siberia.
Well, here's a better question. Does anybody care what's happening in Siberia?
Well, in Siberia, there's these mysterious giant holes.
Pingos.
Yeah!
No. Right?
No, they're not pingos?
They're just giant holes.
I thought they were called pingos.
Diameter about 50 feet.
Wow.
And pretty deep.
I'm sorry, one of the comments section on this is the ancient aliens guy.
The ancient astronaut theory suggests.
I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
Well, they talked to some of the townsfolk in the place. Experts have said that it is not like this is the work of men, but it also doesn't seem like a natural formation.
We're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs.
Hmm.
So there's these giant holes. In Siberia, there's now three of them they found.
I'm going to, and
they have no idea what made them.
I'm going to run a little historical factoid by you guys and our listeners, and if there's any connection, I'll leave that up to all of you to decide. In the late 80s, a Soviet oil rig out in Siberia reported that the deeper they drilled, the more clear they claimed they could hear human screams. And they claimed that they were drilling into hell itself. Draw your own conclusions.
According to some of the observers, at first people said initially the place was smoking, and then there was a bright flash. In a second version of the story, a celestial body fell from the sky.
Hmm.
I don't know, man.
This is interesting.
I want to believe that the truth is out there.
So did they record the voices from hell?
No.
Oh, well, see, they should have. Well, that's what I don't understand. This, you get this thing, and you hear your voices. You think somebody would whip out a tape recorder?
Like Soviet oil drillers out in Siberia. You know, I doubt they had. It's not like they had like their iPhones on them.
Well, plus it was the 80s. I'm sure it wasn't. There wasn't a cassette deck laying around. It was not only the 80s.
It was the 80s in the Soviet Union. So take the technology level and knock it back another decade.
Let's see. The Siberian Times reports that Anna Kurchakova from the Subarctic Scientific Research Center.
Whoa. There's enough news in Siberia to constitute a daily newspaper?
My thoughts exactly.
I mean, Siberia is a big place, man. Thinks the crater was formed by a water, salt, and gas mixture igniting an underground explosion, the result of global warming.
That sounds to me like some Illuminati government cover-up bullcrap. We all know it was the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens.
It was the aliens.
Now, why they would want to drill holes for no apparent reason is anybody's guess.
But it's not them drilling holes. Mm-hmm. It came from the inside. So what it is the alien spaceships were buried underneath.
Oh, it's like War of the Worlds all over again.
Yeah. The last thing here. So somebody put up an ad on Craigslist because, you know, it's getting to that time of year when football's coming up, like we said. So people are getting their fantasy football drafts.
Oh, boy.
Going here soon.
This ought to be good.
This guy on Craigslist put out an ad asking for a young lady to help with his draft party.
Okay.
And to quote, the job includes running the draft board, getting guys drinks, and of course doing it all in a bikini or lingerie or some sexy outfit of your choice.
Well,
we're not too picky. We do not hire strippers for the event because there are some guys that are older and have wives and kids and feel a little weird. However, we will tip, and some of the guys will tip if you push the envelope. If you want to go topless, that is your incentive. And I'm sure if you can make good tips doing it, but it's not expected.
So they don't want to hire a stripper, but they want to hire a stripper. I got to think that they've just been overwhelmed with responses to this.
There must be tons of women who would just jump at this opportunity.
I mean, this stuff always works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, the picture of the guy put with the ad, too, is great. These are the pictures he put of himself to show that he's a trustworthy dude. The pictures are him in a with sunglasses and a sport jacket on, taking a selfie in his bathroom.
Right.
And not like a selfie with the camera turned around, taking a picture in the mirror.
Uh-huh.
So you get the full bathroom experience.
Right.
And then the other one's just him with an open collared shirt.
Well, now we've had our title earlier, Cacophony of Suck, and now we've got our picture for this week's show. You got to love it when a good plan comes together.
Oh, God, he looks like such a douche nozzle.
Oh, my God.
But, hey, I mean, if you want to go to his draft party and maybe take off your shirt, they're not going to tell you not to, but, you know.
Well, what's it pay? I might think about it.
Serious inquiries, please, only please. Include pictures in your email, and please make sure you can commit to the date.
Wow, dude, this is
usually we don't – We only tip the girls, so I can't say for sure what you would make, but I guarantee as a minimum $150 for each girl.
Oh, so they want more than one.
Yeah.
This guy is, he's the biggest idiot in the world right now, I think.
If interested, I would ask that you and your friend be available to meet someone from the group at least once before I fly home, just to verify you're legit and you're serious about entertaining the party. If I don't have two girls lined up and come through for us, it would be a nightmare for me.
Good luck, dude.
Good luck.
I'm sure it's going to be easy. Good luck piece on your cake.
Good luck on your serial killer screen.
Right. Like I said, he's probably had more responses to that than he knows what to do with. Okay. So that's going to do it for us. You can follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports. The website is basicallyasportsshow.com. The email, basicallyasportsshow@gmail.com. And Mike, what do we have coming up? Well, actually, on Bags this week. No, I guess it would be next week.
Next week, yes. On
this new recording date's got me confused here.
Next week on Bags, episode 26, Jack is going to attempt to defend Highlander 2.
Oh, good luck with that.
There could only be one.
Regularly called one of the worst movies of all time. He will attempt to defend it, and I'm not even going to try for that. I'm just going to sit back and let him bury himself because there's no way you can defend that movie.
Yeah, Jack, good luck with that one. All right, so any final thoughts, guys?
My final thought.
It's time for Dodger Baseball. Hi, everybody, and a very pleasant good evening to you wherever you may be.
The dulcet tones of Vin Scully coming back for his 66th season.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know, I got to applaud that. 66
years.
Wow.
From 1950 to 2014-15.
Not bad. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it.
The Angels have won.
All right, even better.
With another save.
Another save.
What, the 17th inning? Is that what we went to?
13th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good luck, Oakland.
So that means the Angels gain a half game, and they're two back of
there you go.
Oakland Athletics.
All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you all next time right here on Basically a Sports Show. Later.
Bye.
See ya.
You said you wanted my love to be a part of your game, but when I came from above, I looked around but you turned all lame. But now you're scratching and crawling your way up from the grave. You should have stayed in the dirt, girl. It's like I told you. It's like I told you I came from outer space. That's how I know your name. It's like I told you I came from outer space. I wanna take you away. You took a drink of my sweet love. And then the poison took
hang up and try again.